Saturday, March 26th. Lennon had the best night's sleep he's had in a long time. It was nearly 10 when we awoke. Susan wore heirloom bridal veil, long and elegant. Her father stood beside her, answered the minister's question when he said, "Who gives this woman in marriage?" "Her mother and I do. All of us like that. Christ Church is so impressive that anyone married there, in front of God and George Washington and Robert E. Lee, must feel as permanently married as any Roman Catholic." My eyes were very much on Trudy. She looked so serene and quiet and acceptant, and so very loving, as though this is all I can do, as far as I can go. From the church, we went to their home to a reception, probably a pre-revolutionary home, furnished with delightful antiques, very much the record of their lives together, and warm with pictures and books, and a fireplace, and windows that open on the garden. There were about 100 guests, good men in the cabinet. Tom Corcoran, Joe Fowler said, "This is my oldest friend in Washington," and the Willie Hopkins, their next-door neighbors. There were a lot of pictures and gay chatter about "you're getting in practice for Lucy," and then we were back at the White House at about 12:30. Abe came to lunch. He always comes at all the crises in our lives. Quiet and wise, and tough and understanding. Always humor and compassion and closeness. To work on my speeches with Mrs. Provenson. I did in the Queen's room for about an hour and a half. One at the university, San Antonio when the lights are turned on, and at Fort Davis. It sounded pretty good. I always feel better for having worked. Tonight we were going out to dinner. Lyndon had actually thought of going to Camp David. Early this morning he said, "Let's ask the McNamaras." But when I did at the wedding reception, Margie had said, "No, we can't. We're having a small dinner. But why don't you come and have dinner with us?" So at 8 o'clock, in black tie and my white sari evening dress, we went to the McNamaras, the Katzenbachs, the Walt Rostows, and Barbara Ward, Lady Jackson, were the other guests. But first, the room was full of young Margie McNamara's friends, home for spring vacation. Two Katzenbachs, her own friend named MacArthur, two or three more. Most of them from Eastern schools, they looked, I can only say, different from the youth I have known firsthand. The most attractive was the one named MacArthur, Margie's date, who was going to Woodrow Wilson at Princeton and was interested in politics. It was a good evening for talk. The McNamaras were brown as could be, just back from a place in the Alps where they had skied, with Craig's arm still in a cast. Last time it had been his leg. I love the joy they have being together, and climbing mountains is what they like most. The next two on my list, for such a week, away from the grind, are Lyndon and Dean. Bob McNamara and Walt Rostow began talking about the time when they were both applicants for Rhodes scholarships. One had been asked to define liberalism, and then Nazism. Another had been asked to make a hog call. I found myself sitting next to the Attorney General for a good part of the evening. He's interesting to listen to, and talking about his education at one of the colleges of, I suppose it is Cambridge, called Balliol. He spoke of how many African students there were there, a great deal of foreigners, especially Africans, and of how once on seeing a movie of a genuine African tribe rowing a long dugout canoe, the audience had broken out impulsively and hilariously into "Row, Balliol, row." We talked of Washington and politics and the effect on our children's lives. I used Linda Bird's old statement, "Mama, this town was planned for congressmen and their wives, but not for their children." And he said, "Yes, it's a company town." Interesting expression for our one main means of livelihood, working for the government. Lovely Elspeth Rostow talked about their honeymoon. War was just fresh over, and they had gone over on some sort of a research study. Found themselves living in an old castle in Austria. High-ceilinged, elegant rococo, quite devoid of comforts. On a diet of cucumbers, some flour that care packages were sending in, and thin-sliced salami. For about 3 months, this was their introduction to married life and international politics. I was looking at Walt with the idea in mind that he might play some part of a role in the vacancy left by MacGeorge Bundy. Brilliant, delightful company, full of ideas, and very different from us. But if these last 2 years plus have showed anything, they have shown Lyndon's ability to stretch and encompass and work with men very different from him. As always in such a gathering, I am conscious, and I wonder if Lyndon is conscious, of the difference in the educational backgrounds of the men he deals with and of where fate has thrust him. I think a keen awareness of this is a part of the motivation of his bull-like thrust toward education, his determination that more and more people shall have it available, even if they come from Dimebox and Rosebud and Johnson City. If I could have chosen an evening and a set of companions, I couldn't have picked a more delightful one. And there are few of them in our life these days. People assume that we are very busy, that we don't go out to small private parties. At least, that's what I hope they assume. My only regret was that I did not get to talk to, or rather listen to, Barbara Jackson, one of the most interesting women I know.